The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mark Newman from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall share with you information from various medical sources. The People's Pharmacy, Joe and Teresa Graydon. Taking pumpkin seed oil reduces nighttime urination. Question. My husband uses roasted pumpkin seed oil on his salads. He learned to love it growing up in Austria, where it is very popular. One evening, I read that it is good for urological issues. I've been plagued with urinary tract infections and often have to get up in the middle of the night to trek to the bathroom. I decided to give it a try. Even though I was very skeptical, I am thrilled. I've taken pumpkin seed oil capsules for probably 2 years or more, and I haven't had a urinary tract infection in more than a year. Also, I do not get up at night any longer. Answer: pumpkin seed oil has been used to treat symptoms such as nocturia, frequent nighttime urination, and overactive bladder. That's cited in the Journal of Traditional and Complementary Medicine, January through March, 2014. We could find no studies demonstrating that pumpkin seed oil can prevent urinary tract infections. Question. After reading that cinnamon can help control blood sugar, I decided to try it. I eat a little bit of ground cinnamon when I eat sweets or anything like white bread that quickly turns to sugar. Before, if I ate dessert at night or even French toast for breakfast, I felt terrible after about 45 minutes or so. Now, if I want something like that, I eat a little cinnamon before or during my meal. I do not feel bad at all. Answer. Cinnamon can help reduce the rapid rise in blood sugar that happens after eating something that is quickly digested, like sugar or white bread, cited in the Journal of Diabetes Research online, July 14, 2015. Cinnamon can be taken as a powder or tea, but we think tea is better. The components of cinnamon that lower blood sugar are water-soluble, so they are carried safely in the tea. Coumarin is a toxic compound that is found in some cinnamon. It is not water-soluble, but you could get some in ground cinnamon. Not all cinnamon in the supermarket is the same. Cinnamomum cassia, that's spelled C-I-N-N-A-M-O-N-M-O-M-U-M, cassia, C-A-S-S-I-A. The most common type has more coumarin than cinnamomum vera, Ceylon cinnamon, C-E-Y-L-O-N. You can learn more about this fascinating spice and get recipes for its use in our book, Spice Up Your Health. What's really inside Vicks VapoRub? Question. I recently spent $4.50 for a 1.75-ounce tub of brand-name Vicks VapoRub. When I read the ingredients, I noticed that after camphor, it says synthetic. I wrote to the company, and the response was, we have used synthetic camphor since 2004-2005. I have found house brand chest rub for just 99 cents, and the ingredients don't list anything synthetic. I don't see why we should pay more for more synthetic. I recently was in Germany and had a nasty cough. It responded immediately to Klosterfrau chest rub, which contains no camphor, menthol, and eucalyptus oils, nothing synthetic in it. Answer. The manufacturer of Vicks VapoRub stated in response to your query, quote, VapoRub's formulation has natural ingredients as well as synthetic ingredients to more reliably ensure our ability to source our raw materials. The synthetic camphor was tested and proven to deliver the same product benefits as the natural camphor for VapoRub, unquote. The active ingredients in Vicks VapoRub are camphor, eucalyptus oil, and menthol. They have been staples in this product for over 100 years. Other, quote, inactive, unquote, ingredients include cedar leaf oil, nutmeg oil, petrolatum, thymol, and turpentine oil. To learn more about unusual ways people have used Vicks VapoRub, you may wish to download our free guide to unique uses for Vicks at www.peoplespharmacy.com. Question, as a practicing pharmacist, I enjoy reading your column and learning about alternative treatments that you and your readers have found useful. I would like to mention that I would like to mention a word of caution about using an NSAID, non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drug, to halt a migraine attack. My sister used quite a lot of Excedrin migraine to treat her migraines over the years. Unfortunately, her migraines also caused her to vomit. She was recently hospitalized for an extremely low hemoglobin count requiring multiple blood transfusions. An upper GI endoscopy revealed a hole in her esophagus. NSAIDs, aspirin, and Excedrin, which contains aspirin, all can lead to ulcers in the stomach or duodenum. These drugs also erode the esophagus if vomiting is involved. Answer, thank you for reminding our readers about the potential hazards of aspirin and non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs. Low-dose naltrexone helped chronic pain. I've had pain in many parts of my body for years. Like the proverbial frog in boiling water, as my pain increased, I just dealt with it because I seemed to have so many side effects from medications. My doctor put me on low-dose naltrexone. It is not an opioid, and it has definitely helped me with my pain so I can think and stay active. Some people have switched from opioids to LDN, which is low-dose naltrexone. But medical oversight is essential. Not all doctors know how to do this correctly. I wish more of them would educate themselves in its use. And the answer? Naltrexone is an opioid blocker that is prescribed to help people overcome addictions like alcoholism and a dependence on narcotics. When used for such purposes, the dose is 50 milligrams. There is growing interest in low-dose naltrexone, 1.5 to 5 milligrams, for conditions such as Crohn's disease, fibromyalgia, and multiple sclerosis, cited in Pharmacotherapy, March 2018. At such low doses, naltrexone appears to help regulate the immune system and reduce inflammation. This drug requires a prescription. Low-dose naltrexone is only available from compounding pharmacies. Question. I had a full right knee replacement. Within 24 hours post-surgery, I had blood clots in both calves. I was immediately put on Coumadin. I was changed from Coumadin to Xarelto after a few months and have been on it ever since, along with the daily low-dose aspirin. I have no idea what Xarelto and daily aspirin are doing to my body. All my physicians say that I must stay on it for the rest of my life because once you have a blood clot, you are then at a higher risk for more. Answer, we are shocked that you did not receive medicine to prevent blood clots prior to your knee replacement. That is now considered standard practice. A study just published in JAMA Surgery online, October 17, 2018, demonstrates the importance of anticoagulant treatment for knee replacement surgery. Surprisingly, aspirin was just as effective as drugs like Xarelto, Coumadin, and low-dose heparin. The authors conclude that aspirin alone at a cost of $2 a month is simple, safe, and does not require monitoring. You may have to continue on an anticoagulant indefinitely. That is something your doctor will need to review periodically since all anticoagulant medications pose a risk of bleeding. From the Wall Street Journal, Your Health by Samathi Reddy, an uphill fight against fake medication. Tosh Ackerman took part of what he thought was a Xanax pill to help him sleep one night 3 years ago. His girlfriend found the 29-year-old dead the next day. The Xanax he obtained was from an acquaintance that he obtained from an acquaintance was counterfeit, says his mother, Carrie Luther, who lives in Mount Hermon, California. Toxicology reports found it contained a fatal dose of fentanyl, a synthetic opioid often produced illicitly for the black market. It looked like Xanax to the untrained eye, says Ms. Luther, who now regularly speaks about the dangers of counterfeit drugs. The issue of counterfeit prescription medications like Xanax is a growing problem, attracting the attention of law enforcement organizations and pharmaceutical companies like Pfizer, which manufactures Xanax. In June, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration convened a meeting around the problem of illegal opioids sold online and through social media. Millennials and those younger rely heavily on social media, says Alex Ku, KHU, Assistant Director of the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement Global Trade Investigations Division. Criminal organizations recognized that trend and were starting to see advertisements and sales of counterfeit or substandard prescription drugs on social media sites. In a survey conducted last year by the Alliance for Safe Online Pharmacies, ASOP Global, 55% of U.S. consumers said they have or would consider purchasing medications online, notes Libby Bainey, a senior advisor to the Washington, D.C.-based nonprofit. At best, counterfeit medications aren't what they are supposed to be, like sugar pills. At worst, they're dangerous and even deadly, particularly when fentanyl is involved. The biggest danger is that these sites do not require a medical examination or a prescription, and the sites do not impose limitations on how much or how often the consumer purchases the drug, Mr. Ku says. The National Association of Boards of Pharmacy reviewed nearly 12,000 internet drug outlets selling prescription medications to U.S. patients. Of these, about 95% were found noncompliant with state and federal laws and NABP standards, according to a report published in September, which highlighted the role social media sites play. Pfizer manufactures Xanax, an anti-anxiety medication also known as Alprazolam, but its patent has expired. That means the vast majority of the medication is made and sold by other companies and available in a generic form. Pfizer's global security team provides counterfeit awareness training to law enforcement and customs agencies around the world, in addition to helping with investigations. Recently, they spoke with a group of psychiatrists and separately state attorneys general. Over the past 3 years, Pfizer has reported more than 10,000 Facebook accounts or profiles selling counterfeit Pfizer medications to the social media company, says Neil Campbell, Director of Strategic Intelligence at Pfizer. They've referred more than 1,000 Instagram accounts selling counterfeit Pfizer products over the past 6 months to Facebook, Instagram's parent company. A spokesman for Facebook says the company's regulated goods policy prohibits anyone from purchasing, selling, or trading non-medical drugs, pharmaceutical drugs, or marijuana. We have zero tolerance for any attempts to sell, trade, or purchase any of these substances on Facebook or Instagram, she says. We take a very comprehensive approach to this because the bad actors are constantly trying to change their tactics. The company says it works hard to find and remove drug sales by blocking and filtering terms associated with them, and say it works quickly to shut down suspicious accounts that people report to them. It is also working on developing new technology to identify when someone is trying to sell drugs. Lev Kubiak, Vice President and Deputy Chief Security Officer at Pfizer, says in 2017 authorities from 49 countries seized more than 12 million counterfeit doses of Pfizer products. More than 5,000 vendors were advertising Xanax for sale on the dark web, websites on an encrypted network that can't be found through most search engines or browsers without requiring a prescription. Last year, Pfizer Global Security conducted a pilot program with law enforcement and bought 138 Xanax samples on the dark web. They tested them and found only 7 or 5% were authentic. Products included pills that looked exactly like Xanax but were counterfeit, as well as gummies. A red version of the pill purported to be 2 milligrams actually contained 5.5 milligrams of the active ingredient. Ms. Bainey of ASOP Global says consumers face multiple risks from buying medications from an unverified source online. The drugs can have too much or too little of an active ingredient, be substandard or expired, or contain poisons and contaminants such as floor wax, mercury, boric acid paint, or antifreeze. The ASOP Global Survey also found that more than 80% of doctors don't talk to patients about where they get their drugs. If a patient tells her doctor her medication isn't working, a doctor unaware that she bought the drugs from a questionable source could mistakenly prescribe a higher dose or a different product. ASOP Global advises consumers buying prescription medications online to buy only from sites that end with pharmacy. These sites are verified and approved by the NABP. They also suggest checking URLs for websites through NABP or at the website LegitScript. And they suggest avoiding websites that claim to sell products from Canada. Many have no connection to Canada. Thomas Kubik, president and CEO of the Pharmaceutical Security Institute, a Virginia-based nonprofit, says there are roughly 15,000 to 17,000 annual cases of counterfeit drugs reported globally to his organization from its members, who include security directors from 33 pharmaceutical companies. The number of new reported cases was 1,178 from 134 countries in 2017, up 7% from 2016, he says. Cases range from small quantities to millions of units. The bulk of counterfeits appear to be found in China, India, and the U.S., he says. The latest and most dangerous ingredient authorities are finding in counterfeit medications is fentanyl, says Shabir Safdar, executive director of Partnerships for Safe Medicines, a San Francisco-based nonprofit. He says officials found counterfeit drugs made with fentanyl in 44 states and confirmed it to be a cause of death in 26 states. Right now you're seeing Xanax and opioids like oxycodone and hydrocodone made both overseas and domestically with fentanyl, which is super cheap and easy to get. Soon will mark the third anniversary marking the death of Ms. Luther's son. She plans to get together with family and friends to celebrate his life. You don't have to be an addict to die from counterfeit medications, Ms. Luther says. It's rampant now, and it's all about greed. There's no way to tell if what you're getting is the real thing unless you get it from your local brick-and-mortar store. Brain scans gauge workers, from the Wall Street Journal, by Daniela Hernandez. Research on surgeons showed brain activity altered with skill level, hints about fatigue. To gain new insight into how highly specialized workers learn skills or react to stressful situations, researchers are leveraging advanced scanning technologies to look at what is happening inside the brain. In the latest findings, a team of researchers studied surgeons as they performed surgical simulations and found they could identify novice from experienced surgeons by analyzing brain scans taken as the physicians worked. The researchers, who described their findings recently in the journal Science Advances, said that in part, of the brain involved in planning complex behaviors was more active in the novices. Skilled surgeons had more activity in the motor cortex, which is important for movement. The researchers who developed a machine learning system to analyze the scans also showed that training resulted in a shift toward higher activity in the motor cortex. In total, the brains of roughly 30 surgeons and trainees were monitored while they performed pattern-cutting tasks that are part of professional tests for certifications. The brain data metrics were more accurate than current professional tests used to assess the same manual skills, according to the study. The researchers said the system is experimental and still in early testing. Biomedical engineers not involved in the research called the findings exciting and a step toward systems that can assess levels of expertise and competence among neurological data. They add to a growing body of research on the brain activity of aircraft pilots air traffic controllers, athletes, doctors, and others to gauge mental workload, skills learning, and hand-eye coordination. Such information could have implications for how workers are trained and how they do their jobs, pilot engineers said. Researchers think such devices could be used to give workers feedback about their performance and to predict who would be a good baseball player or surgeon. Neural data could offer more objective measures of performance and proficiency than medical certification boards now use, according to the research team, which included engineers and surgeons. Ultimately, they want to improve the way surgeons are trained, not limit what they can do, they said. A future iteration of their technology could be used to assess comfort levels with certain medical proceedings or to help doctors figure out whether they are rusty on certain skills or too fatigued to operate, they said. The team is looking to test their system in more realistic settings and to include tests of cognitive skills, according to the researchers. For the current study, they assessed only motor performance. Critical to the success of the technology is the social issue of acceptance, said Sivrani D., the director of the Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute Center for Modeling, Simulation, and Imaging in Medicine in Troy, New York. Doctors must want to use it, said Dr. D., who co-led the research. Some neuroethicists worry about making brain assessments compulsory. In recent years, tools to measure human brain activity while people are active rather than sitting still in guidance scanners have improved and become more widely available. That allows scientists to get data in environments closer to what a person would experience normally. The researchers in the paper relied on a technology known as little F N capital N I R S, short for functional near infrared spectroscopy. A person wears a skull cap embedded with tiny lasers that beam near infrared light into the skull. Some of that light reflects back out and can be captured by a detector placed nearby. The quality of the detected light gives scientists clues as to whether blood flowing to the brain is oxygenated or not. An increase in oxygenated blood suggests more brain activity. The device, which had 16 of such optical sensors, doesn't measure neural activity directly. Hassan Ayaz, a Drexel University biomedical engineer experienced with building FNIRS devices, said the basic principles reported in the study in which he wasn't involved could eventually be useful in fields like design and marketing to understand how people use products or make purchasing decisions. There is growing interest in such optical sensors among researchers worldwide, he said. Similar technology is being used to detect brain bleeds, he added. Silicon Valley investors looking to develop mass market brain interfaces are also experimenting with FNIRS and other similar technologies. Facebook Inc. is reportedly developing brain optical imaging tech. The company didn't respond to a request for comment. In the past year or so, the decades-old FNIRS technology has had this surprising renaissance because of Silicon Valley's investment, said Elizabeth Hillman, a biomedical engineer at Columbia University's Zuckerman Institute. News and our views from the Mayo Clinic Health Letter. Non-prescription pain relievers are alternative to opioids. Opioid drugs are among the most powerful pain-relieving drugs available and play an important role in relieving severe short-term pain and cancer pain. However, they can cause many side effects, including dizziness, tiredness, constipation, and falls. These side effects are especially prevalent in older adults. Opioid dependence and overdose death also are serious issues. In the search for ways to manage pain without opioids, One recent study shows that in certain emergency department settings, the simple combination of ibuprofen, such as Advil, Motrin IV, and others, and acetaminophen, such as Tylenol and others, can be as effective in relieving short-term pain as can several common opioid and acetaminophen combination drugs. The study involved about 100 people seeking emergency care with moderate to severe arm pain, such as from a fracture or sprain. All were given identical-looking pills for their pain that differed only in the medications they contained. Pain levels were assessed after 1 hour and 2 hours. In the end, there was no meaningful difference in pain relief obtained from the combination of ibuprofen and acetaminophen compared with the opioid and acetaminophen combination drugs. About 18% of those in the study did eventually need a stronger rescue dose of an opioid drug to achieve pain control. Mayo Clinic experts say there are many situations of moderate to severe short-term pain in which ibuprofen and acetaminophen can achieve effective pain control without the risk related to opioids. They note that long-term misuse of opioids often begins with short-term use for short-term pain. Vitamin D doesn't reduce fall risk. For years, vitamin D was touted for its role in preventing falls in older adults. However, recent evidence suggests otherwise, resulting in a change in advice from the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force. A summary of the scientific evidence that prompted the change was published recently in an issue of JAMA. This review of clinical trials focused on common fall prevention strategies, including 7 studies on vitamin D supplementation and exercise. The findings on vitamin D were mixed. One study showed a reduction in falls for people taking vitamin D, but 5 studies showed no significant difference in falls. The remaining study, which involved people receiving high doses of vitamin D yearly, actually showed an increase in falls. Based on these results, the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force issued a change from its 2012 recommendations. The task force now recommends against vitamin D supplementation to prevent falls for those 65 and older. In addition, based on supportive evidence in its review, the USPSTF continues to recommend exercise for reducing falls. For people who have osteoporosis or vitamin D deficiency, vitamin D supplementation alone or often paired with calcium may be an important part of a treatment plan. Ongoing studies are expected to provide better clarity in the coming year on the role of vitamin D supplementation and health. We've run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Mark Newman, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org. So long until next time, and if you have any comment or questions, please call 919-832-5138. Stay healthy.